The first meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for the 92nd Legislature will come to order. The first action we will take is to take the roll to establish our quorum. And so I call on the clerk to conduct the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
I am here, ready to serve.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Rowley.
Rowley present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang.
Sorry, present. Present.
That completes roll call.
To the clerk, I count 19 present. Is that your roll?
Yes.
Very well. With 19 members present, a quorum is established. This hearing is being held, is being conducted remotely on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01. Emergency House operations in response to the COVID-19 infectious disease pandemic requiring public health exercise of social distancing. This allows our House committee to use distance voting as we engage in debate and discussion for moving legislation. The rule requires that meetings be held in this manner continue to provide the public an opportunity to provide testimony. You can find this rule on the Minnesota House website. To sign up to testify, please email this committee's committee administrator, Jamel Lundy. His email is present on our website. It's jamael.lundy@house.mn. The hearing can be viewed via the Minnesota House webcast schedule page on our website. Meeting documents will be posted on this committee page on the Minnesota House website. Members, I will not be repeating that every time we meet from here on forward, but as a first meeting, I thought it was important for us and for the public to hear that. Everything I shared is available on our House website. I'll be referring to that at future meetings and dispense with all the verbiage. I do want to ask right now that members, we'll work out the kinks and the rhythm in terms of making sure that we're identified for debate and that we're identified as being present. It's not unusual for members, to not be present right at the time of roll, but we certainly do want to acknowledge when, for the record, when members are here. That's vitally important. So for now, let's do this. Let's make sure that in order to register your presence, that you text and or email our clerk. We'll do an introduction of her shortly, as well as our committee administrator. Not everyone has those phone numbers yet, and so emails would be perfectly fine. Today's agenda is a simple agenda. We're not going to be taking any votes, so no anxiety on this issue. But again, I just want to make sure that anyone who has any of the members wishing to be acknowledged and cannot be acknowledged via our hand function, that there's another way in which they can communicate with the chair given our social distancing. Members, I'm going to make a few opening comments here. I'm then going to ask our minority lead, Representative Johnson, to also share some thoughts. And then I'm going to offer an opportunity for us to do quick introductions of one another before we move on with the rest of the agenda. So members, my name is Carlos, and to the public viewing, my name is Carlos Mariani. I represent District 65B, which is in the heart of St. Paul. It does include the Capitol complex itself and encompasses several distinct neighborhoods on both sides of the Mississippi River. The district has for over 100 years been racially and culturally diverse, and in many ways has served as the Ellis Island of Minnesota. It is currently has one of the largest Latino communities in the state. The land has been the home of both Dakota and Anishinaabe people for centuries, and I acknowledge living on their ancestral homelands. Public safety is a core and fundamental function of government. And because we are a self-governing people, how we provide for the public safety both reflects and advances the values we hold central to our democracy. Recent events have challenged our compact with one another in having and keeping public safety as we seek to express our political views. They have also challenged us as we seek to ensure that each and all people who live among us are afforded fair and humane treatment consistent with their human rights. We will be visiting these values often in this biennium as we seek to strengthen and deepen our rightful commitment to look out for one another and to keep one another safe from harm and help one another to be productive community builders together. I frankly cannot think of a more honorable and important committee for members to serve on than this Committee of Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform. It's my privilege to serve as your chair, as I've had the privilege to do so over the course of the last couple of years, and I look forward to having good debate and producing good laws that serve the best interests of each and every Minnesotan. And so with that, members, I'm going to call on my colleague, Representative Johnson, to make some opening comments, and then I'll explain how we'll do introductions. Representative Johnson.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariani. It's a pleasure again to be working with you over this next 2 years. Over the next 2 years, we have a lot of work to do. We have to deal with a budget that I don't know if all the members know that our portion is over $750 million. And growing, unfortunately. Over this next year, we're with the virtual meetings, it can make it a lot more difficult to do a budget. So we're going to have to work very diligently and do the things that are proper. One of the things in public safety is that it's a constitutional responsibility of the state of Minnesota for the public of safety. And we want to make sure that the citizens of this state, whether they're in Minneapolis, St. Paul, whether they're in Bagley or in International Falls, that they can, if they choose to, they can go for a walk down their street without having to worry about crime. That's one thing. And this state is very diverse. Issues that are going on in International Falls or in Marshall, Minnesota, are usually a lot totally different than the issues going on in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So we have to make sure that when we make these laws, we're keeping the entire state in mind, and that we're not pushing something that may help one area of the state, but could be detrimental to another area at the same time. We have to make sure that we treat everybody fairly. And with that, I will turn it back to you, Chair Mary.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I too look forward to working with you, and we will not always agree on a number of issues, but I think we always strive awfully hard to be agreeable as we disagree. It is the purpose of our legislative design that people bring their beliefs and their perspectives and their strategies. And even as they differ, and they share with one another. When done well, we can produce terrific work for the people of Minnesota. I think you and I have done some of that in the last couple of years. I look forward to continuing in that spirit. Members, I'm going to have members do introductions of one another or of each other, or of themselves. I'm sorry. I'll call on you, what I'd like you to do is tell us your name, obviously. Tell us what district you're from, just say a few, brief descriptions of your district, nothing super long, and then name, if you could, one issue, and again, no details, otherwise we'll be here for a couple hours. name one issue in public safety, criminal justice reform that you look forward to addressing in the coming 2 years. So with that, I'm going to start with our vice chair. I should have given Representative Frazier a heads up, but hey, that's how I roll. Representative Frazier.
No worries, Chair Mariani. And thank you, Chair Mariani, for sharing the brief intro that you did, and particularly with recognizing the land that we all preside on today. And Rep. Johnson, thank you for sharing your words as well. I do think that we do have diversity within our state in terms of the different regional areas. But I also think when you govern from a perspective and you're centered around equity and equality and justice, whatever laws you put in place will be helpful to everybody, and we'll support that and push everything forward. So I will say that we keep that centered in mind as we're having discussions in this committee. So Cedric Frazier, District 45A, which covers the cities of Crystal, the eastern part of Plymouth, and almost a majority of the city of New Hope here in the northwest suburbs. And one particular issue that I am interested in working on, and this came about as we continue to have this conversation around accountability for officers that violate the sacred oath of protect and serve, is doing some more work around our post board so that they can show up and reaffirm their position as the ones who provide our licenses and also take licenses away and hold the officers accountable when there is an issue or complaint provided.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Edelson, you served as our vice chair over the last couple of years. I'm real pleased that you requested to be back on this committee. I look forward to working with you. You're up next.
Good to see everyone, and welcome to the new members of the Public Safety Committee. Heather Edelson, I represent Edina, and all of those things that you might think about Edina are not true. We're actually awesome. I am a clinical social worker, so come from the lens of how do we be preventative about public safety. So really looking at going upstream on a lot of these policies is really important to me, and really happy to be here and see all of you.
Very well, thank you. Representative Hollins, you are new both to this committee and to this legislature. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. So I'm Representative Athena Hollins, and I am representative of District 66B, which is the north part of St. Paul. So part of East Side, the North End, and Como Lake. And I am delighted to be present here and, you know, really work on some of these issues that are important to our constituents. I've talked about this before, but people in my district want to feel like they can call the police and feel like they can have a rapid response, but also not fear for their lives and fear for the lives of the people that are around them. And so I'm really interested in looking at what alternatives to policing we could add to our police force to take some of the pressure off of our police and also, you know, maybe respond a little bit better to the things that are happening in our communities with more targeted responses. So thanks for having me here.
Welcome again. Representative O'Neill, you and I, this committee did some really important work over the last couple of years. It's good to see you back on the committee. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Representative O'Neill, I have 29B, which is Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake, the townships with those names, and then also Silver Creek Township. So I am just north and west of Minneapolis, and it's a fast growing community. A lot of blue collar folks out there, a lot of people that are tradesmen, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, welders, people that own their own companies, small and large, and it's a very diverse economic base there, from marginal living to very extravagant. It's just kind of all over the place. Monticello is a big commuter district, or is commuter city. A lot of people work in the metro. And now they're actually staying home. So this whole COVID thing has really affected my district tremendously, because they have to balance what's happening with their kids and distance learning and then working from home, because lots of them were commuters and now they're not. Now they're at home. And so it's a very big mix. What I'm looking forward to continuing to work on, since this is my fifth term on the Public Safety Committee, is the rewrite of the entire chapter of criminal sexual conduct. And so there's been a working group that we put together legislatively, and they've been working hard at the rewrite. And so I look forward to working with Representative Mueller and getting that across the finish line. We just got the rape kit bill across the finish line, and that was a Herculean lift. And so I'm very excited to hear that that started on January 1, that all rape kits will be tested. And so this is just another extension of my work that I've done for the past 7 years or so with domestic violence and sexual assault. And we'll also be doing probably more police reform stuff. And I had a little bit to do with some of that bill actually getting to a place where we could agree. So I look forward to working with the other side of the aisle and come to things that we can agree upon.
Very well, thank you. Welcome back, Representative O'Neill. Representative Lucetto.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it is an honor to be on your committee again. I am starting my fourth term in the legislature, and my entire time in office, I've had the privilege of serving on the Public Safety Committee. You know, the apple that's behind you, Mr. Chair, is distracting. That's, I'm eyeballing that. It looks really good. We've had some robust conversations last term, and I have no doubt we'll continue to have those this coming term. But we know that the whole topic of public safety is incredibly important for each and every one of us, for all of our constituents that we have the privilege of representing. And I sincerely hope that we can produce a really good product this year that preserves the constitutional responsibility of public safety and among the other conversations that we're going to be having. About myself, I, like Representative O'Neill, have the privilege of serving up here in Wright County. I would say the biggest landmark in my district is the Albertville Mall. So I'm hoping each and every one of you at one point have visited the Albertville Mall and spent some money up here. My background, I originally was going to school for law enforcement. I have a two-year and a four-year degree in law enforcement. But after graduating with that, I decided I wanted to take that into the digital space. So I went into cybersecurity, which is what I've been doing for the last 15 years, more than that, actually, in 15 years. And in addition to that, as my primary occupation, I'm also a real estate agent, a general contractor, a small business owner. My wife and I have real estate that we invest in. And I've also taught college for 7 years in the cybersecurity space, a former college instructor just before being elected. So again, looking forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a privilege to be here.
Welcome back, Representative Lucero. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and hello to members and members of the public. So Dave Pinto, I represent the southwest part of St. Paul, Highland Park, Mac Groveland area. So you may know St. Kate's and St. Thomas and right around McAllister College as well. I work outside the Capitol as a prosecutor for the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. I've specialized in gender violence, was a domestic violence prosecutor for some time, and then working in the area of fighting human trafficking. So I've done a lot of training for police and trying to reform how we identify and intervene in those situations. And now I charge cases as well. And I got into that work in order to help protect people who are vulnerable. And that feels like that's a lot of our work in this committee and throughout my own legislative work in all kinds of different ways as well. I feel a particular responsibility to make sure that our criminal justice system works well. Our public safety system works well for everyone involved, and certainly including my constituents and yours as well, and each person involved, and hope that I can provide some help and expertise in that. I also chair the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, I'll say that I feel like when we have issues later in life, as often we do in people having interactions with the systems that we oversee, that's often because of things that happen much earlier in life, and helping to make sure that kids have a great start for me is very tied into my work as a prosecutor and connected to the work of this committee as well. So glad to be on. I've been on the last couple of terms and happy to be serving with you again, Chair Mariani, and everybody else. Thank you.
Welcome back, Representative Pinto. Also a new member in our legislature and new to the committee, Representative Mueller.
Hello, my name is Representative Patricia Mueller, and I proudly represent 27B. The major area, my district is so unique because the major town that's in this district is Austin, which of course has Hormel and the Hormel Research Institute. Hormel and this area here has drawn a great amount of immigrants and refugees because of the lower cost of living and being able to get some high paying factory jobs. And so our schools and areas here have really embraced having a new Americans come, and that's been a really exciting change in this district over the last decade or so. But I also include a lot of rural areas around where there are generational farmers. And I also represent areas such as Leroy and Lyle, which borders up to Iowa, and smaller areas such as Sargent and Waltham, Racine, which has some really great, just really great areas. I'm really proud of my area and really proud to represent it. I am a public school teacher and have been so for the last 17 years. As a matter of fact, I literally finished my job. I was in the classroom as recent as December 23rd and then stepped into this role here as a legislator, which has been a different transition, but it's been really exciting. I do have my master's in curriculum and instruction with an emphasis in literacy, and I'm currently getting my doctorate in education leadership with an emphasis in literacy as well. One of the reasons why I was really excited about being appointed to this committee is because of research work that I did last term about the education to prison pipeline. And that's been something that once I was starting to read about, was a very deeply disturbing, but also deeply passionate subject of mine. And so as we are looking at my little niche, I guess, is into juvenile justice systems and how, again, kind of like what Representative Ellison was talking about, preventative measures as well. So thank you, Chair Mariani, and I really am excited to serve with all of you this term.
I look very much forward to working with you, Representative Mueller. It sounds like we have a lot in common. Representative Raleigh, also a new member to the legislature and to this committee. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My name is Donald Raleigh, 38A. I represent Washington County and Anoka County and the cities of Lexington, Circle Pine, Centerville, Blaine, Lytle Lakes, and Hugo. I spent a number of years in the United States Army where I was an infantryman, and I look forward to serving on this committee.
Super. Welcome to you, sir. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jamie Long, represent Southwest Minneapolis. Excited to be returning to the committee for my second term. And among other things, I've been focused last session and will again on post-conviction relief, and in particular, I'm looking into expungement and how we can give people better second chances. So thanks, Mr. Chair, for your leadership on this committee.
Thank you. Also looking forward to working with you again. Representative Vang, a new member to this committee, although not a new member to the legislature. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Samantha Vang. I represent District 40B, that's Brooklyn Center, and a small portion of Brooklyn Park. This is my first time on this committee, so I look forward to working with all of you and to learning more about public safety. I look forward to continuing the work of police accountability that started last session, and also supporting the work of what you all mentioned too. Thank you.
Terrific. I'm glad to have you on the committee. Representative Paulson, I'm awfully glad to see you again on this committee. Welcome.
Good to see you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm Representative John Poston from District 9A. This is my third term in the House, my second term on this committee. 9A is Todd, Cass, and Wadena County in north central Minnesota. So we're about 80% agriculture and about 20% cabin country. If any of you come up to Gull Lake, I have the west side of the Gull Lake chain. I'm looking forward to hopefully working on some school safety issues this time around, Chair Mariani. And I also served on the subcommittee for corrections last time, and there's a lot of work I think that still needs to be done there for sure. So I hope that that's going to be on our calendar as well. And I really look forward to working with all of you.
Look forward to accessing your expertise and experience from your work last year. You represent a very beautiful part of the state, I have to say. Representative Paulson.
Yeah.
Brand new to the committee and to the legislature, Representative Feist.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm glad I went later because I had to like formulate my thoughts. I'm very excited to be here on this committee, and I would say that I bring kind of two areas of interest and passion and expertise. The first is around immigration law. I'm an immigration lawyer in my day job, and in immigration law, we call this area crimmigration. So I'm excited to bring the expertise in how our criminal laws interact with our immigration laws. And to see if we can do some proactive things on that front. In addition, I'm a former board member of the ACLU of Minnesota. I care very deeply about civil liberties, and so that includes worrying about government overreach and also just looking at equal treatment under the law. I am really excited to be here and look forward to working with everyone. Thank you.
Super. Welcome. Representative Cleavorn, new to this committee, but not new to the legislature. Welcome.
Thank you. It was hard to get my computer off mute. My name is Ginny Cleavorn, and I represent Plymouth 44A, which is the northwest and central part of Plymouth, and we are in the northwest suburbs. This committee is exciting to me this year. I'm really looking forward to it, getting to know the members, learning from the members, sharing our different lenses, and seeing how we can come together for some really great legislation for our state. My areas of interest are in fairness in the juvenile justice system, and also making sure that everyone's voice is lifted up and heard as we have these difficult conversations. Thank you. And Chair Mariani, I look forward to working with you and learning from everyone on the committee.
Likewise. Representative Grasso, didn't recognize you, man. That's That's pretty good. I aspire to be able to grow one of those. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and glad to be here. I'm Representative Matt Grossel. I represent District 2A, North Central Minnesota, essentially from the northwest angle, the inlet little village up there, and down to Akeley, which is Lake of the Woods County, Beltrami County, Clearwater County, and part of Hubbard County. So I represent a good portion of North Central Minnesota. I come with a law enforcement background, worked 12 years in law enforcement before meth lab injury took its toll on my respiratory system. So I had to bow out early, otherwise I'd still be there. Now, one of the biggest things that I am working on and will continue to work on, child pornography. Our investigators and our attorneys, our child pornography statute is so outdated, I would say outdated, that these investigators and county attorneys, they have to chase after federal prosecutors in order for these children to get justice. So reform of our child pornography statute has been something that I've been working on since I've gotten here. And I put together a piece of legislation that would help alleviate that problem. It would give justice to these child victims, and it would also help our investigators and our prosecutors to be able to take care of these cases in the state rather than having to chase after a federal prosecutor to see if they will take it. So that's something I would like to talk to you, Mr. Chair, and probably Mr. Pinto and a few other people about to try to get some help with this and get it moving and get these kids some justice. You've all had a very graphic picture painted by my detective that came and testified before. And to say that it was shocking is to say the least. That's what's being done to our children, and we need to change this as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grossel. We did find some good common ground that we worked on the last couple of years. We'll be hearing from Sentencing Guidelines Commission on related issues on this as well. Representative Novotny, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I'm Paul Novotny. I represent Elk River 30A, which is also Big Lake Township in the better part of Otsego that Representative Lucero serves, or the better part of the district, I should say, to steal his line. Retired law enforcement. This is my second term on public safety. When I was serving in the last session, I was still actively working and retired in May. So over the course of the summer, I had a chance to read some self-improvement books, and one book that I really took away a lot from pointed out that we should keep the first things first. And my priorities this session is going to keep the victims at the focus. You look over the course of the summer, between Minneapolis and St. Paul alone, over 100 homicides, multiple times more than the rest of the state put together. Crime rates going off the scales in the metro areas. I think we need to remember that for 100 homicides, how many people will be affected just by those crimes? How many victims' families are affected and the ripple effects that go with that? I think we need to keep that first. Thank you.
And then we have Representative Huat.
Thank you, Chair. You can hear me, right? Yep. So anyways, thank you, Chair Mariani, and I really consider this an honor to be on this committee as in my second term. This is my life. I've for 30 years I spent in EMS or fire. I started out going to Inver Hills in the 80s for law enforcement and ended up in EMS, but that's cool. That's kind of where I come from. I represent Rosemount, Apple Valley, and the small town of Coates. And listening to the depth of this committee, it's going to be a real great committee to be on at, in this time and this place, and looking forward to doing some good work. Thank you, Chair.
Looking forward to your perspective and expertise on EMS work and our first responders and emergency services on this committee. And then, you know, I want to say I left the best for last. I think it's true, but my good friend Representative Jean.
Oh, well, thank you.
I think you might be muted.
Can you hear me now?
There you go.
Sorry about.
Oh, you got muted again, I think.
Can you hear me now?
I can.
I don't know what's going on here. Yeah. Again, my name is Jay Hill. I represent the southeast portion of the city of St. Paul. I'm a son of refugees to this country, born and raised in public housing and poverty, having seen many family members, friends fall through a system. I'm looking forward to bringing my life experience and that weighs on how we can craft policies to take preventative measures and also address the many pressing issues in the communities today. So looking forward to being part of a bigger conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm glad you're on this committee with us, Representative Strong. Welcome. I think I've gotten everyone. If I haven't, please shout out, but I think I did. I'm not doing Representative Johnson or myself because we had a chance to speak already, and we're already a few minutes over, so I want to make sure we keep moving. I don't see or hear anyone that I've missed. Let me just ask the staff to very quickly just state their name and wave. Hopefully we'll have another chance at an upcoming hearing to hear a little bit more from each of you. I'm just going to go right off of what I see in front of our committee administrator, Jamel. And you might be muted. There he is.
Hello, my name is Jamel. I'm the committee administrator for this committee, and I hail from a military family and come from Woodbury, but I currently reside in North Minneapolis and Northeast. So.
You all will be interacting with Jamel. If you're not, then you're doing something wrong. So thank you, Jamel, for your service again this biennium. Mr. Walls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Walls. I'm with the House Fiscal Staff. If you need any help with bills that may have a fiscal impact or any questions about money, please let me know. That's about it. Thank you.
All right, very well. We have a brand new committee legislative assistant, Caitlin Ogunfalabi. Caitlin, welcome to the committee.
Hello, thank you so much. My name is Caitlin Ogunfalabi. I'm from Woodbury, Minnesota. And I'm happy to be here.
Looking forward to working with you, Caitlin. Over at our GOP caucus, Mr. Holquist, it's always good to see you.
Nice to see you, Chairman and committee members. My name is John Holquist. I'm House Republican Research. I've been working with the House GOP caucus since 2011 and worked in the governor's office prior to that. So looking forward to staffing this committee. Thank you, sir.
Welcome back, John. Ms. McDaniel from your counterpart in the DFL caucus.
Thank you, Chair. Committee members, my name is Ellen McDaniel. I'm the DFL caucus research for this committee. This is my second session with this committee and committee.
Ellen, good to have you back as well. We have our House research staff with us. Let me see if I can find them. Mr. Johnson.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It's Ben Johnson with House Research. I staff a variety of issues for this committee. The primary ones are probably DWI issues, domestic violence issues. I'll handle the judiciary budget if it gets folded into this committee at some point, as happened last biennium. And I tend to handle most of the sort of general crimes from murders, assaults, thefts, those sorts of things.
Very well. Welcome back, Mr. Johnson. We depend pretty heavily on your services as well as that of your colleague, Mr. Diebel. Mr. Diebel.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. This is Jeff Diebel in Nonpartisan House Research. I work alongside Ben and John, providing nonpartisan legal services and fiscal services to the staff. I typically deal with firearms, corrections, public safety, criminal sexual assault. Those are the topics that take the majority of my time, and I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, Mr. Diebel. Members, we're truly blessed to have the nonpartisan House staff, truly hardworking and very experts in their field. And so make sure you're making good use of them. They're here for us. I know there's some House Info people here, but I don't know who they are, but I suspect, you know, that's with our tech help. I don't know that we have any other staff. If I do, if I miss anyone, please shout out quickly. I'm not hearing that. Okay. So, members, you should have in front of you the temporary committee rules that the chair is presenting before us. It's possible that we will, in the near future, make permanent rules, either out of these or make some adjustments, but I think it's really important for us to get off right away, making sure that we have rules that help guide our work. The rules before you are like 99% the same as the rules of last year. So there's nothing new and controversial other than my adding an emphasis on public testimony. You know, one of the challenges we have with this virtual platform is to be able to manage testimony that comes quickly. You know, there's technical things about getting people into a waiting room, queued up, you know, et cetera. And so the rule encourages public testimony to be, to have, to notify us one hour before the committee start. And of course, the chair will also be using some discretion in the event that that poses, you know, a particular issue or problem. The rules, for the most part, members who are experienced, know that they have to do with making sure that, you know, simple common sense things like, you know, make sure your audio is off on your cellular phones, make sure you're here on time so we can start on time, that all conversations, presentations, and questions go through the chair, just as we do on the host floor where everything goes through the speaker themselves, that the rules also require any presenter providing you know, presented information to provide that information 24 hours prior to the meeting so we can make sure all members have access to that. It might be a PowerPoint report or even a written testimony. The chair will determine the time limits of debates, witnesses, and times allowed for bills and amendments. This is always a challenge, folks. There's always a tension between making sure that there is a reasonable amount of time for us to have a conversation at the same time that we are called on to move on things. And so starting early and ending on time is critically important. Important part of the rules always has to do with the submission of amendments. The rule is the same as last year, which is that amendments be received by noon of the day prior to the scheduled hearing. It is then incumbent on the committee to post those amendments 24 hours prior to the committee hearing. And then amendments to amendments also must be received prior. Obviously can't receive them simultaneously, so the rule calls, just as last year, 5 p.m. Filing of amendments to amendments. So members, with that, those will be our temporary rules as we go forward. And I'll let you know, I'll be working with the minority lead to see if we need to make any adjustments to those rules. Then, next on the agenda is a brief presentation from Mr. Walls on our accounts. And when I say brief, I mean really brief, unfortunately, Mr. Walls, but it's okay. Well, all I really want to do is make sure there's a very quick look because we will be coming back to these in a much more detailed way more than once. So we'll be doing walkthroughs with that. So Mr. Walls.
Chair Mariani.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I do have a question on the rules that I'd like to get some clarification.
Sure.
One of the issues that was brought up last session once we started this virtual nightmare is the fact that we've had people in the waiting room that we didn't know were there that could on other bills that we could ask questions to about the current bill that we were discussing. I'm just wondering if there's any way that we can find that our research staff could have access or somehow find out who's in that waiting room ahead of time so we can make sure if we have questions. It might be another bill not related to the one they're going to testify on, but they could have some relevant information for the bill that we're discussing. And also to make sure that we know what the testifiers are and to make sure that the testifiers we have lined up are available at the same time.
Yeah, let's work on that. I agree. And, you know, obviously we're still in the, you know, months of using this new platform. It would be terrific to be able to, you know, at least have a list or a view somehow of who's sitting in that waiting room. I agree. So let's work. I think our IT staff heard that. Certainly my committee staff heard that. And let's see what we can do with that. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Walls, or Mr. Walls.
Mr. Chairman, I was told by the CIA I have 2 minutes to go through this. I'm going to try to share my screen. So when you can see that, let me know and I will begin.
There you go.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, we primarily have five accounts or five agencies within the purview of this committee. And the first one is sentencing guidelines. And sentencing guidelines, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission is an ongoing policymaking body to develop and maintain a model for rational and consistent sentencing standards that promote public safety and reduce disparity in sentencing practices throughout the state. They both develop those practices, do research, and provide reports to the legislature. And Mr. Chair, I've included, although some of these agencies may have other funds, I've included the 2022 general fund base for each of the agencies under our purview. Mr. Chair, that takes us to the Department of Public Safety. The Department of Public Safety is the state agency responsible for emergency preparedness, law enforcement, fire safety, traffic safety, driver licensing, gambling, and alcohol enforcement and other functions. This agency is split between two committees in the House, and the jurisdiction of accounts under this House committee include Homeland Security and Emergency Management, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, also known as the BCA, Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement, Office of Justice Programs, or OJP, and this is a program area that distributes grants to nonprofits in the area of justice programs throughout the State Fire Marshal, the Board of Firefighter Training, and the Office of Electronic Communications. Accounts in the Department of Public Safety that are under the jurisdiction of Transportation Finance would include administration and related services, which is their central office, the State Patrol, driver and vehicle services, traffic safety, and pipeline safety. Mr. Chair, moving to the next page, the Private Detectives Board, they are a small board that receives a base of $277,000 each year. And the description of their agency from their website is the mission of the Private Detective and Protective Agent Services Board is to ensure investigative and security service practitioners meet statutory qualifications and training for licensure and maintain standards set forth in Minnesota statutes and administrative rules. The board is a 5-member panel comprised of one local private detective, one licensed protective agent, one law enforcement representative, 2 public members, and the board oversees more than 300 investigative and security license holders. Mr. Chair, we also have jurisdiction over the Peace Officer Standards and Training, or POST Board. They have a general fund base of $11,131,000 per year. The POST Board is an organization responsible for regulating training and licensing of law enforcement officers in the state of Minnesota. And while the board sets training standards and creates model policies, it also administers training reimbursement funds to local law enforcement agencies as well. Mr. Chair, that brings us to the final agency under our purview, the Department of Corrections. They begin 2022 with a general fund base of $628 million per year. The Department of Corrections is the agency responsible for operation of state correctional facilities that house felony level offenders. The department is responsible for vocational, educational, and rehabilitation programs to incarcerated individuals, and also works in conjunction with local jurisdictions on offender supervision during probation and after offender relief. The agency operates 11 facilities throughout the state. That agency is split into 3 different programs: the institutions themselves, community services, which does things like victim notification and some of the offender supervision in the community, and operational support, which is their central office. And Mr. Chair, that is the overview of our accounts.
Wow. Well done, Representative Walls. Thank you. Members, we will be going through these accounts in a more slower, deliberate manner. Particularly as we consider the appropriation requests from the departments and the boards, don't feel like this was your one shot to understand what's going on here. So with that, members, I'm going to move us forward to the next 2 parts of the agenda. Unfortunately, we're not going to have the amount of time that I had hoped for both of these, and I hope that our testifiers are taking note of that. I apologize to them all for crimping their time here, but I do want to make sure that we end on time. So we're currently, a little bit before 2 o'clock. We're scheduled to go through 2:30, and I intend to adjourn at that time. So we're going to hear from 2 entities. The Board of Private Detectives, and then the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. And so I'm going to encourage those testifiers to work within a 50-minute timeline. I do apologize to you, but we will have you back before us, way before the end of the session. So we're going to start with the Board of Private Detectives. Quite frankly, entity we didn't spend a whole lot of time on in the last couple of years, although we did make some important changes to this small but vitally important board. And so we have Abby Guthrie, who's the interim executive director, and the board chair, Mr. Rick Hudson. I'm not sure who's going to start first, but whoever it is, just chime right in. And the way we do this, and this is more for new members than anyone else, is that individuals introduce themselves, their names, and their title, as opposed to just simply start talking. And then seek to be recognized by the chair in terms of answering any questions or responding. So with that, I'll see who goes first here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Guthrie.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Abby Guthrie, and I am the Interim Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Private Detective and Protective Agent Services. I was recently named to this role on January 4th, so that is why I've asked our board chair, Richard Hodston, to be present as well.
Congratulations to your appointment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to share my screen, so if you want to let me know when you can see it, I'll get started.
There you go.
It is our agency's responsibility to regulate and provide critical oversight to the 11,600 private security and investigative professionals within the state of Minnesota. By regulating, we work to ensure those providing security and investigative services meet requirements set forth in Minnesota statutes and administrative rules. This includes, but is not limited to, making sure license holders and their employees do not have any disqualifying criminal records, are receiving all required training, including armed training, and are properly credentialed. The board was established in 1974 and is a 5-member panel comprised of 2 public members, 1 law enforcement representative, 1 licensed private detective, and 1 licensed protective agent. These positions are appointed by the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Listed here are the statutes and rules that govern private security and investigative professionals in Minnesota. In accordance to Statute 214.04, the Department of Public Safety provides us with the office spaces, specific administrative support, financial advisement, and human resource services. Our most important stakeholders are the public citizens of Minnesota. License holders also depend on us to process their applications, renewals, and other administrative licensing processes to ensure they do not have an interruption in service to their clients or employment for their security and investigative personnel. We also work frequently with law enforcement, mainly regarding unlicensed activity, police impersonators, investigating violations by license holders, and assisting in law enforcement investigations when applicable and requested. Displayed are the agency's core functions. Some of the most prominent are applications, license renewals, and various investigations. The application process is extremely intensive and detailed. Our agency works to validate all information provided by the applicant and conducts a background check investigation on each applicant. We do not have online systems, so this documentation is sent to us via hard copy and stored in physical files. License renewals are submitted every 2 years by license holders and consist of verifying information as well as an additional background investigation. Investigations that we do are primarily violations of statutes or rules, complaints against license holders, unlicensed activity, and police impersonators. Another statutory responsibility of our agency is ensuring license holders and their employees are receiving training to meet continuing education requirements. Per statute, license holders and their employees must complete 12 hours of pre-assignment training and then 6 hours of continuing education every year after that. Any armed individuals must receive an additional 6 hours of training specific to weapons, alternate uses of force, and first aid and CPR. This includes annual certification from a firing range for all who carry a firearm. We currently certify 201 training providers and 1,373 training courses. Our license holders provide a multitude of services for the public citizens of Minnesota. Protective agent services are critical to the overall security within the state of Minnesota. They perform essential public safety services to allow law enforcement to respond to calls for service and not become overwhelmed with protecting venues and other locations. Recent events, such as various instances of civil unrest, have proven the need for private security and has increased the demand in this industry, thus emphasizing the need for regulation. Private detective services are also critical as they involve more than surveillance. Many of our private detective license holders specialize in cybercrime, sexual harassment cases, litigation support, and many other services. These services include the collection and analysis of personal and protected information on individuals and businesses, which proves the importance of regulating this industry. We currently have 364 license holders. Please note that this is the number of license holders only, as each license holder may employ as many individuals under their license as they would like. This total represents approximately 11,600 investigative and security employees within Minnesota. All of these employees are what our agency is responsible for regulating when it comes to background checks, training, and identification cards. I also want to add that the number of license holders can fluctuate in any given biennium by roughly 100 when looking at the amount of licenses that are approved and surrendered each month. When looking at newly approved licenses for fiscal years 2019 and 2020, the demographic is a majority of male license holders over 40 years old. This is an overview of our agency's statistics from the past biennium. Aside from the number and overall amount of administrative penalties levied, our statistics have remained fairly consistent within the biennium. In regards to administrative penalties, the board has begun penalizing per violation in an attempt to ensure license holders are being held accountable for all licensing violations. This is an overview and breakdown of the complaints and investigation that our agency has done in the past biennium. In fiscal year 2019, our agency budget allowed for 2 full-time positions. During this time, we were able to complete 1 complaint investigation. In fiscal year 2020, our budget was increased to add a 3rd full-time position. As a result, we were able to complete 15 investigations. While the new position was able to dramatically increase our ability to complete investigations, in the past several years, our agency has seen a large increase in unlicensed activity across the state. With our current resources, we do not have the ability to follow up and investigate every instance of unlicensed activity. We conduct regular audits of license holders, either as a result of a complaint or as part of their renewal process. It is the responsibility of the license holder to ensure all of their employees are passing background checks, completing training, and are issued an identification card. Audits are done at the direction of the board when a violation is found or reported to us, and are how we identify the license holder's compliance with state statutes and rules. This shows the results of 2 large audits that were done in the past biennium. As you can see, this only represents about 20% of the entire industry that we regulate. The majority of these violations came from training. Either armed or unarmed employees are not completing training in a timely manner or simply do not complete any training. This is a growing concern when it comes to consumer protection, as these individuals sometimes are called upon as first responders to serious incidents and may be in situations they have little to no training for. Currently, legislature has appropriated our agency $277,000 annually. All revenue from applications, renewals, administrative fees, and penalties is deposited into the general fund. The current budget allows for 3 full-time positions: the executive director, which is currently vacant, the investigative analyst, which was my previous position, and our administrative assistant, who was recently hired in December. We do have a part-time employee that we are able to have due to some salary savings from position vacancies over the past year. In the past biennium, our agency has had a total of $404,940 in non-dedicated fee receipts. On the slide is our current fee schedule, which makes up a portion of the revenue that our agency generates into the general fund. Our agency has taken the initiative over the past biennium to create a stronger relationship with our stakeholders. Part of how we're continuing to do this is by enhancing our website and adding an FAQ page as well as an About Us page to establish transparency and create more accessible information about the board. We are also working with legislators to revise some outdated statutes and administrative rules. After getting some feedback from our license holders and certified training providers, we are looking to update some training standards to reflect the current industry trends. Some of our agency's largest accomplishments over the past biennium have been in response to the challenges we faced with the COVID-19 pandemic. We were recognized as best of the best by the International Association of Security and Investigative Regulators for our response to COVID-19 as a regulatory agency. During the first few weeks in March, we were able to shift our entire staff to remote working within 1 business week. While working remotely, we established a COVID-19 update page to our website where stakeholders could access all necessary forms for license renewals, a list of current online training courses, and the remote working contact information for our staff. We are also in the final stages of developing the agency's first affirmative action plan. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for your time this afternoon. I am happy to answer any questions at this time, but here is my contact information if you do have any questions that come up at a later date. Mr. Hodson should be able to answer any questions that you might have also, as he's been working with the board longer than I have.
Thank you for your very thorough and clear presentation, Ms. Guthrie. And again, thank you for assuming the temporary leadership position of frankly, members, I believe a vitally important, small but vitally important state function here. And it seems to me that, and maybe Mr. Hudson, you can just comment very quickly. It seems to me that the kind of work that the board is tasked with is probably the kind of work that's going to grow as our society continues to evolve. I know that during the social unrest triggered by the civil rights crisis this summer, that there was an important role for protection agents. Working to particularly protect property in our core cities. I also know that with the tensions around the pipeline issue up north, that also may be triggering the use of private, preferably licensed individuals. And though this state is not, has not moved on cannabis legalization as South Dakota currently did, as I cast my eyes out across the nation, I know that where there has been movement in those areas, that it's been accompanied by a strong uptick in private services, protection services. I think in terms of thinking ahead, it's really important that we're building a really strong regulatory body here that can ensure good practices and protection of the public. So just to give you a quick opportunity to introduce yourself and make a comment, I am going to move along unfortunately with the other board, but if there's time, we'll come back for questions as well. But Mr. Hodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you always have a risk when you let a lawyer have the floor, but I gotta be brief. You're absolutely right, committee, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear before this committee. You can tell I'm old school, even sitting here at home, I still put a coat and tie on. But the civil unrest, the pipeline situation, and many other things are going on, this is an incredibly important industry. A lot of members of the public think of private detectives, and we're talking Philip Marlowe and all that fancy good stuff. The real body and the bulk of what this industry is now about is the security function. And between the growing need, the lack of resources in public law enforcement sector, this is a critical issue. I'm a public member, and one of my passions and one of the reasons I was appointed to this board, I believe by the commissioner and reappointed, is because I view this as a major issue of public safety. This is a consumer protection agency. When you walk into a venue, you should, and you go through a magnetometer, or you go have your bags searched, or you sit down in the bleachers or at a concert, you should feel comfortable that you can do so safely. And that's what this industry is all about. And I'm simply proud to be a part of it. And Abby does a great job. And if committee members need anything from a board chair perspective over the course of this session, absolutely please reach out to me.
Very well. I appreciate your leadership, Ms. Rodston, and I also appreciate your accommodating my need to move quickly here. Hopefully that's not an indication of any lack of recognition of the importance of this board. Thank you both for being with us here today and for the work that you do. With that, members, we're going to move on to the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. We have Executive Director Nate Reitz and Board Chair Kelly Mitchell. Good to see you both. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kelly Mitchell, and I'm the executive, I'm the chair of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. With me today is Nate Reitz, who is our executive director for the commission. I really appreciate the opportunity to come to appear before you today so that we can tell you a little bit about who we are and what we do, especially since there are so many new members of the committee. We really appreciate the chance to do that. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, we're going to tag team and kind of go back and forth through this together through the slides. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's quite all right. I will, just because it's our, you know, custom, I'll be calling your last name as you do that. Don't let it throw you. Just keep going. As long as I get it on the record, it's all good.
Okay, great. So I'll turn it over to Nate.
All right, Mr. Reitz.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Director Reitz.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. My name is Nate Reitz, as Chair Mitchell said. The goal of today's presentation in the very few minutes we have today is to give you a very high-level overview of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. We've selected three topics to that end. First, we'd like to talk to you a little bit about the Commission's history and structure, just as an introduction to it. And also, second, to explain at a very high level how the sentencing guidelines themselves work. And finally, to give you a brief overview of some of the information products we can provide to you as legislators to help you do your job well, including the report to the legislature, which will be published on Friday.
Very well.
All right, so let's get into the a little bit of on the history.
Mayor Mitchell.
So just for the benefit of those who aren't as familiar with our system here, before sentencing guidelines, every state in the country had a parole system. And the way that worked is the legislature would define crimes and set maximum punishments. And then judges would pronounce sentences typically as ranges, for instance, 0 to 10 years. And then the parole board would monitor an individual's progress and determine when it was safe to release them from prison. That model fell under fire in the 1970s. There were critics who thought that parole boards and courts were exercising their discretion in ways that resulted in disparate outcomes, often there were calls that they were discriminating based on race, class, social position, that sort of thing. And then at the other end, there was also critics who believed that the sentences that were being imposed through that process were not harsh enough. So there's sort of disparate treatment, people who were receiving different sentences for the same type of behavior. And then there was also critics who thought that the sentences weren't long enough. So the way that Minnesota responded to that was to establish the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. And our charge was to create statewide sentencing guidelines, which did become the first set in the nation. And at the same time, the legislature eliminated the parole board and moved to a system where all of our sentences are determinate, meaning that once a prison sentence is pronounced, everybody serves 2/3 of that time in prison and about 1/3 of that time on supervised release, which is our version of parole. Nate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. So as Chair Mitchell just mentioned, that the legislature gave the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission the task of establishing sentencing guidelines for the district courts. That was one of basically six tasks that, as I see it, that the legislature gave the commission that still exists today. And really, the first three responsibilities all had to do with the sentencing guidelines. In addition to establishing them, they had to meet as necessary for the purpose of modifying and improving them, which they're still doing, and then to report to the legislature on such modifications annually, which is what we'll be doing on Friday. But in addition, the legislature's vision for the commission was a little bit broader than just establishing the sentencing guidelines. It viewed the commission as being a potentially valuable information resource for the state. So the commission was asked to serve as the clearinghouse and information center for local and statewide sentencing practices data. And to this day, we find that the states with the best data on sentencing practices all seem to be states with sentencing commissions. And Minnesota really led the way in this. Also, the commission was required to conduct ongoing research into various matters relating to the improvement of the criminal justice system, which really goes back to meeting as necessary for the purpose of modifying and improving the sentencing guidelines. And it was required to periodically make recommendations to the legislature on the improvement of criminal law and procedure. So, Chair Mitchell now will explain a little bit about how those changes change the distribution of sentencing authority.
Chair Mitchell.
So the end result is that we have a unique distribution of sentencing authority in Minnesota. The role of the legislature is to define the activity that constitutes a crime. So you define the crimes and you set the maximum punishments for those crimes. So every statute that defines a crime has a phrase in it somewhere that says something along the lines of punishable by a sentence of up to 2 years or up to 40 years. That's the maximum punishment. So you set that. Within that, the commission establishes the policies that determine what an appropriate sentence would be in felony cases. So we take that broad directive given to us by the legislature, and we break it down into rules that the courts can use to establish sentencing. And then the courts, the judges on this slide, actually apply that policy real time to individual level cases and further refine the sentence as needed to respond to the facts of those cases.
So let's, if I may, Mr. Chair, talk about who's on the commission. So the commission was designed to represent both the criminal justice system and the public. There are three members who are appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and they represent the three levels of Minnesota's court system. And I'm not going to identify the individuals who sit in these seats for purposes of time, but they do represent they are judges who represent, or retired judges in one case, who represent the three levels of the court system. The other eight members are all appointed by the governor. Two members represent the opposite sides in a criminal court case, the prosecution and the defense. And then three members represent the criminal justice system that's in effect before and after the court case. That's police, probation, and ultimately the Department of Corrections if they're sentenced to prison, and also in some cases probation. Finally, three members represent the public, including one who must be a felony crime victim. So as I said, we'd now like to give you a very simplified explanation of how the sentencing guidelines work. And I should say, Mr. Chair, we're happy to come back at any time and give more details on any of the information we're presenting today.
Thank you.
So this, what you're seeing here is not an eye chart. You have a larger version of this in your materials at the end, the full-size sentencing grid. But this is the standard sentencing grid. There are two others for sex offenses and drug offenses. But like any grid, this sentencing grid has a vertical axis, a horizontal axis, and various cells where the axis values meet. In this case, the vertical axis is offense severity, with less serious felonies at the bottom and more serious felonies, ultimately second-degree murder, intentional murder at the top. First-degree murder is not on the grid because it is the penalty is mandatory established by law. The horizontal axis, on the other hand, doesn't look at the offense, but the individual defendant's criminal history, with first-time offenders falling in the zero column on the far left. The criminal history score grows with a record of other felony convictions, but it can also grow in some cases with a record of misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, and even juvenile. In addition, the score may increase when the individual was on a probationary or other custodial status at the time of the crime. At the intersection of the severity level and the criminal history score is a cell, and each cell contains a number. If that cell is not shaded, the sentencing guidelines recommend an executed prison sentence, and the length of that prison sentence, as recommended, is found in the cell in months, with a wide range in which the judge has complete discretion to sentence. If the judge does not impose the recommended prison disposition or the recommended prison duration, the judge must articulate substantial and compelling reasons for the sentencing guidelines departure. These reasons are subject to review by the appellate courts, so either party can challenge the sufficiency of the judge's reasons. If the cell is shaded, the recommended disposition is a stayed sentence. That doesn't mean no prison. What doesn't mean no confinement. Even if prison sentence is stayed, the judge may pronounce up to 1 year of local confinement as part of the sentence.
So one thing that I want to point out is that we call it the presumptive sentence, where those two cells, where those two attributes meet, the cell where they meet. We call it the presumptive sentence because we're presuming that that is an appropriate sentence for a typical case sharing those characteristics. And this word typical is really important for the policy of the sentencing guidelines, because we are trying to set policy for typical cases. So when you think about robbery, what typically occurs in a robbery? How is that offense typically carried out? Who typically carries that out? The typical case is the heartland of the sentence that we're trying, that we're shooting for with our policy. But our policies also are structured intentionally to recognize that there are some cases that are just not typical. They are not the norm. They're not what we normally see. The offense might have been carried out in a way that is more egregious than normal. Or there might be something about that person who committed the crime that requires mitigation or aggravation. So we also need a process to take those things into account. And for under our guidelines, that is the departure process. So if the case is atypical, there's an opportunity for the judge to consider that and either give a sentence that's lower than that called for in the guidelines or more harsh than that called for in the guidelines. And all of that is intentional. We built that in so that we can have that individualized sentencing where it's needed. So if you think about sentencing as a funnel going from the legislature down to our policy, down to the judge's decision, refining and refining the sentence as you go, that's the goal, with the end result being a sentence that's appropriate for that particular case. There's a couple of ideals that guide the way that we set policy at the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, and I'll go through those pretty quickly. First off is that we always have to consider public safety. That is an ideal that was that's in our statute. The legislature added that to our statute in 1989, and so we always have to consider that as we're determining what appropriate sentencing policy is under the guidelines. We also have additional policies that have been in the guidelines since the beginning, since the first set of guidelines was issued back in 1979. And the very first sentence of the guidelines reads as follows. The purpose of the sentencing guidelines is to establish rational and consistent sentencing standards that promote public safety, reduce sentencing disparity, and ensure that the sanctions imposed for felony convictions are proportional to the severity of the conviction offense and the offender's criminal history. So a couple of the key points, I already mentioned public safety, but a couple of the other key points in that paragraph I just read are uniformity and proportionality. We strive for that. Uniformity means that people who are convicted of similar crimes and who have similar records are going to get the same sentence under the guidelines. And proportionality means that we do increase the severity of that sentence as the seriousness of the crime increases or as a person's criminal records becomes lengthier. A couple of other policies, another very important policy in the sentencing guidelines, is that sentencing should be neutral with respect to race, gender, social, or economic status of people who are convicted of felonies. The events of this past summer served as a stark reminder to us of our responsibility for maintaining neutrality in sentencing guidelines policies. One of the ways that we've done this in the past is to provide the legislature with racial impact statements. We can prepare statements that will inform you that if you make a policy change, how it will impact the racial whether it will have a racial impact on the composition of our prison population. And every time that threshold is breached, when we review new policies that the legislature is considering, we prepare that statement and send it over so that you can also consider the racial impact of the decisions that you make here. In the coming year, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission will be turning the lens on ourselves, and we'll be performing a more direct review of some of our own policies to determine their impact. In striving for neutrality, the commission should always question whether its decisions may impact a particular group. So policy language that seems innocuous and racially neutral on its face could have devastating effects when it operates differently for different groups. I think that the most obvious example that many of you may be familiar with of this type of impact is the difference that we used to have with crack and powder cocaine sentencing. We used to have a policy where if you were convicted of possession or use of crack cocaine, that the penalty was much higher than if you were convicted of possession or use of powder cocaine. And that impacted people differently because the individuals who were mostly convicted of crack cocaine offenses were Black, whereas those who were convicted of powder cocaine offenses were white. And so that really caused some racial disparity in sentencing. So we'll be looking for those types of impacts as we continue to look at how our own policies, what type of effect our own policies have. The last two principles I'll touch on really quickly are capacity, prison capacity. This constraint has always been really important to the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Minnesota is a community correction state. That means that we reserve our prisons for those who are most dangerous, for the offenses that are most serious. And we tend to prefer sentencing policy that allows individuals to be held accountable for their offenses in the community. And through that monitoring process of capacity, we have been able to maintain a prison population in Minnesota that's one of the lowest in the nation. And then we've already talked about the departure principle. We try to limit those situations to when the court can articulate substantial and compelling reasons for departures from the guidelines. But we do allow for that process because it is important to ensuring that we have individualized sentencing.
In the next few slides, Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk about some of the information products we can provide you as legislators to help you do your job well. If you'd like more information on any of these topics, given the time here, we'd be happy to return and provide that information to the committee. First of all, we have the report to the legislature, which each member of this committee should receive in your email inbox sometime on Friday, January 15th, which is the statutory deadline. Included in that, the first two bullets and the last bullet are all statutorily required. We have to tell you what changes we made to the sentencing guidelines and what changes we're proposing to make to the sentencing guidelines, which you then have the legislative session to block if you would like by passing a law to stop it. Also, if there are any recommendations to the legislature that the commission's going to make, those are in there. As Representative Grossel discussed, we were mandated a couple of years ago to review our child pornography sentencing guidelines, and that report will be in the report to the legislature, I'm anticipating. Also, the chair discussed the neutrality review and a summary of felony sentencing practices, which let me just go through it. Few key points on sentencing practices, although we could obviously do an entire discussion. The first bullet here isn't really our data, it's national data. Minnesota, as the Chair Mitchell just discussed, has the fourth lowest imprisonment rate, but on the other hand, the fifth highest probation rate. Looking at our data, that 2019, which is our most recent year of felony case, which is obviously pre-COVID, we had 17,335 cases. I should say our staff reviews all those worksheets to ensure accurate sentences. That case volume represents a sharp decrease from the record high volume that we saw in 2017 and 2018. Drugs continue to be the largest offense category. That's been true for the last 3 years. It wasn't true before that. It was always property or person offenses before, I believe, 2016. 24% of felony sentences were for executed prisons, prison sentences. The guidelines recommended 34.4% of the cases be for executed prison sentences. So that gap of over 10 points, that's the first time we've seen a gap that large on record. And a record high 13, sort of part and parcel of that, a record high 13.6% of felony sentences were mitigated dispositional departures. That's where a stayed sentence was given, even though the guidelines recommended prison. And then we see variation. We've always seen this by gender, by race and ethnicity, and by geographical area. Some other resources for the legislature that are provided by the six-person MSGC staff. Actually, it's five because one person just left, and we have a hiring freeze. We publish sentencing practices data reports, which are on our website. We prepare individual sentencing data requests if you want reports, if you want to make a request for that. We do prison bed impacts for crime bills. My pro tip for you as legislators is don't just look at the current biennium or the next biennium and the tails. Flip in to see what the ultimate prison bed impact is going to be, because prison bed tends to build up over time because it takes a while for the full impact to be felt. So if you're just looking at the current biennium, you're not looking at what the long-term cost is going to be to the state. The chair already talked about demographic impact statements. We can come back to talk to you more about felony practices and trends, which I just talked about on the law, last slide, what we're proposing to change to the sentencing guidelines, the child pornography sentencing review, which the chair Mariani indicated we might be coming back to talk about, and what progress we're making on that neutrality review. And if you're interested in a follow-up on the 2016 Drug Sentencing Reform Act, we can do that, or any other questions that you have related to sentencing practices. Mr. Chair, we're out of time, and that includes our presentation.
The Director Wrights and Chair Mitchell, thank you for a very concise but very rich presentation. We are indeed out of time. I do have a question for Representative Long. So, Representative Long, I'm going to tee you up first when we bring back the commission for that, because I really do want to get off on the right foot in terms of this committee's culture of finishing on time in its scheduled time. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here with us today and for the work that the vitally important work that you do with a vitally important commission, which I think really sets this state a bit apart from many other states, and rightfully so. With that, members, we will meet again on Thursday at the same time at 1 p.m. Our agenda that day will be an overview of the Department of Public Safety, as well as an overview and presentation from the Pulse Board. So, members, until then, this committee stands adjourned.